Hey, Jews, this is a special summer camp episode. That means the kids are away. They're off at JCC camp or Ramah or Tel Yehuda or Young Judea or Camp Netanyahu or Jabotinsky Lake. And with the kids away, we are inclined to use adult language. But that means that if your kids are home, you have to send them out of the room so we can all yuck it up. That's your obscenity warning. Now stay tuned.
I love Camp Netanyahu.
Camp Netanyahu like that?
Yeah.
What would they do there? What would they do at Jabotinsky Lake and Camp Netanyahu?
Camp Netanyahu ice cream social every night.
Hello, campers. This is a special summer camp episode of Unorthodox. I am your liberated host, Mark Oppenheimer. Two of my four kids are off to sleepaway camp. And now I get to relax in Argo Studios with Stephanie Butnick.
Hello.
Hello. And Liel Leibowitz.
Das Wieden.
Our guests this week are summer camp historian Sandy Fox, summer camp podcaster Micah Hart, and summer camp devotee.
Thunder.
Mother of six, Jordana Horn Gordon, nine of whose six children are off to summer camp right now.
At this point, she just has her own summer camp. It's just easier.
Her house.
When you have six kids.
Is a summer
buy
camp.
Buy in bulk, yeah.
The interesting thing about Jordana Horn Gordon, I mean, some of our listeners think six kids, she's just getting started. But Jordana actually is a conservative Jewess with six. She may have more kids than any other member of a conservative shul in America right now. She's also a great writer.
Ken Yerbu.
Yeah, she's been on the Today Show. She talks about parenting.
Second generation camper.
Anyways, a summer camp episode. We've been playing this for a long time.
I am so excited. So the bus has actually left, like, this past weekend. And, like, you know, you go to the mall and then every single camp bus is there. They're, like, sort of in different places.
When you're from Connecticut, you have to drive your kids yourself.
Yeah.
There's no bus.
So there was a New Jersey bus, a Long Island bus, and then, like, a Manhattan bus. And then everyone else had to fly.
Back up. What was your camp?
Point of Pines Camp for Girls.
Where was it?
Brant Lake, New York, 12815.
And it was not officially Jewish, but it was...
Yeah, so I'm in the subset of camps that were just filled with Jewish people that were
crypto
not like
Jews.
Denominational camps. So it was like, it was a Jewish
was
camp.
Was it kosher style?
No. And I don't think there was pork served, but there was no like discussion of food. Of
or
what,
God.
Yeah, I mean...
So
and
it was
then
basically the reform movement of Jewish
but
summer
so,
camps.
But so...
Leal.
And yet we still send our kids there. On Friday night, there was an optional Shabbat service, and you would just go to get a piece of challah because it was just like delicious. So there would be like six or seven girls there. But for me, I have a totally different camp experience than someone who went to like a Ramah Nick who just like got this like Zionist thing, like this thing that I was
or
just
Habonim drawer.
Yeah.
Or there was like a whole.
Oh, someone told me
world.
They're like, "Aren't you seem like such a Habo girl?" And I was like, "Oh, so I have no idea what that means."
In my neighborhood in New Haven, there's a few people who didn't know each other before they happened to be neighbors, but it turns out they all came up through Habonim drawer which is labor socialist Zionist binational blah 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 blah. Anyway, did you, Liel, your camp in Israel was you?
It was very good camp. It was best camp. What do you mean? We fight with all other camp. All the time.
Did you have a camp? Did you go to summer camp?
Yeah, I was a scout for my entire life.
But that's like every Friday school lets out early so you can go scouting, right?
And then
don't you all belong to scout units?
First of all, it's Wednesday and Saturday.
Sorry.
Second of all, then you just...
You can scout on Shabbat.
I was just thinking that.
Of course you can.
In Israel, you can do anything on Shabbat.
Yeah, it's Tel Aviv.
Scouting is very spiritual.
and then
in June, you take off for the woods. And you don't come back until like October. It's fantastic.
Where boys become men.
That's right.
Boys do become
or
men.
Die.
You know, at some point we were in the woods and there was really nothing to like cook on. And so my mission was to build some sort of makeshift cooking device. And I walked around and the only available object in sight was a latrine. The latrine had a door. It was not a clean door. And I figured, you know, fire has got to kill some of that, right? And so that's what we ate off.
You took
off
the door
of.
Off the hinge?
Yep.
And you burned down the door?
No, we just cooked on it.
Oh, you cooked?
That was our griddle.
Wow.
For the next 3 weeks.
This is why Israel doesn't lose wars. That's how resourceful they are.
We ate shakshuka with feces. I mean, this is how fucking hardcore we are.
That's gross. Is that what Taylor Swift's Out of the Woods is about?
Yeah. Are we out of the woods yet? Are we into the emergency room yet? And you know, you don't shower for like 3 weeks. It's amazing.
That's like also regular camp.
Really are
it's like
an
where you,
animal.
It's where you demolish your first house, basically.
It's where you find little village and put it under siege.
Put it under siege.
Before visiting day, I remember there are all these girls.
I'm sorry, no visiting days. This is awesome.
Of course. So the night before, all these girls would be like blow drying their hair and like trying to look nice. And I was just like, what? Why? My parents know like... how gross I am right now. It was just the funniest thing. There was like this active presentation involved.
For your parents.
For people's parents, yeah.
So listen, I got to tell my camp stories. Have I talked about the summer camps I went to on this show?
No.
So I went to 3 summer camps, each of which is the kind of summer camp that my dad wished he had gone to. Like what?
Okay, so
what,
one is definitely socialist.
Right. So my parents relived the childhood that they wish they'd had when they were in their 30s, that in their 30s they thought, this would have been nice when I was 10 or 11, whether in fact it would have been nice or not. So listen.
When Uncle Joe Stalin was still alive.
Right. So the first camp I went to, because I was Jewish, was of course Quaker, right? Because, you know.
Definitely. What's Quaker camp like?
Right. So Quaker camp, there's this place called Farm and Wilderness. Right now, 117 of our listeners are thinking, Farm and Wilderness? I know someone who went there, right? It's very big in Jewish lefty Brooklyn. My first camp was Farm and Wilderness, which is actually 5 camps around a lake in Vermont. It's like the granddaddy of Quaker camps. It used to be the case, though it no longer is for certain reasons that will become clear to you in a moment, that at Farm and Wilderness, they
I just love the name Farm and
Farm
Wilderness.
It's like two things I don't want to
their
know.
Founders,
Jewish history. Farm, then wilderness.
Their founders, the Webb family, the old, old waspy Quaker Webbs, believed in 5 freedoms. They believed in – this is no joke. This was in the camp literature. They believed in Roosevelt's 4 freedoms, right, from his great inaugural address, and a 5th freedom, freedom from clothes. So they believed in freedom, freedom from want, freedom from hunger, freedom from fear,
freedom from clothes.
And basically they were – now if you know anything about Quakerism, actually in its early antinomian days, they believed in the inner light and they were actually quite radical. If the inner light said run around without clothes, you ran around without clothes. So there were a lot of very anarchist-type Quakers, spiritually anarchist. They brought back that strain of Quakerism. And at camp, if you wanted to be nude, you could be nude. So there were games of like 9 and 10-year-old boys playing nude volleyball. There were nude square dances. You could skinny dip and then towel off.
Was it
and
co-ed?
Go to lunch. So there was a boys – there were 2 boys' camps – and on the across the lake, 2 girls' camps, and each had a separate little minor theme to it. It was 5 camps.
Nudity.
And then there was like a teen camp that was co-ed, and who knows what went on there, right? But this was the summer I turned 9. And I was the one kid in the 300-person boys' camp who refused to go nude ever because I was appropriately modest because I'm a civilized person. So I wore a bathing suit always to swim. I refused to play nude softball. I refused. So I was the camp outcast for wearing clothes.
That's amazing.
So
were those square dances co-ed?
The square dances were actually faculty or camp. Like you'd sneak out at
I'm
night.
I'm grateful for the story mainly because I don't have to imagine you naked now,
right.
Which is good.
So, about as good as my not imagining you naked.
I would have not been the chase one.
So.
At all.
Okay, so the next summer I got home, I said to my parents, what the fuck? What the fuck? So the next summer, they promised to send me to a camp where people were clothed. And they did. They sent me to the very, very famous Camp Kinderland, which is the granddaddy of all labor socialist, blah, 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 like lefty camps. And it was Yiddish socialist, anti-religious. The bunk I lived in was Eugene Debs, which was right next to Joe Hill. And all the bunks were named after great lefty heroes. And on rainy days, we stayed inside. And we wrote letters to – we took out a list and you found out who your congressperson was from your home district. And you had to write – I love that Noah's outside the booth laughing. And you took – and you had to write a letter to your congressperson on 1 of 3 issues. And I remember the one I picked was opposing aid to the Contras in Nicaragua. So I wrote to Representative Boland, please stop Mr. Reagan from sending money to the fascist Contras, blah, blah, blah. That was Camp Kinderland.
Yes, so many things. But at our camp, you had to like write to your parents twice a week or you couldn't get candy canteen. But in your camp, you had to like write to your representative,
Times
a week.
So at
my camp, you're penalized for writing, period.
So
Mark, what were the cheer songs for the Eugene Debs?
Also, how happy were you there?
I could not have been more miserable. I mean, these camps were horrible.
But didn't it like engage your inner...
I'm not fundamentally that political a person, as we know. Like, I wanted to play tennis and capture the flag. And like, I wanted Wonder Years camp, you know? Did that answer your question, Leo?
No, because I want the cheer. Like, we don't do Pesach, we don't do Lent, we hate the 1%. It was just stuff like that.
You could write that. I really have blocked out a lot of that summer.
And do you think it's like a Bernie Sanders bunk now?
Probably. Oh, no, he's not left enough. So I later learned that in the 70s, there'd been like a big split between the Stalinists and the Khrushchev, the ones who'd stayed Stalinist after the news came out and the ones who didn't.
Like, is that the difference between like Kindering and Kinderland? Because Kindering is like a whole other camp.
So is it saying Camp Kinderland?
Oh, is it Camp Kindering? Yeah. I don't know that one.
Once they say in Kinderland, you know, once you go to the Gulag, you never go back.
So let me just finish. Then I got home and I said, yet again, what the fuck, mom and dad?
Like, do you not love me or something? Because these are the most horrible fucking summers.
So two summers, I took the next summer off and I think I had a delightful summer hanging out with my friend Derek and playing baseball and watching John Hughes movies. And then the summer after, we decided to give it one more try. And I think so I said, I want normal camp. So they sent me to Camp Lincoln Farm, which was somewhere outside New York City, and was just filled with the most horrible, materialistic, suburbanite people ever.
And that was, yep, this is camp.
This is camp. And that was the summer, you probably don't remember this, but Jams were big. Remember Jams, the colorful short, mm-hmm. colorful Bermuda shorts? It was a brand. And you had to have Jams. And okay. I didn't have Jams. So I was now, and all the kids because from Great Neck.
Because they took them all in Camp Kinderland.
That's right.
They socialized and you're like, all
I
the
wish
underwear.
This one was a nudist one too. I'd be fine.
But I want to say this. And so I had, I mean, first of all, I want to hear from people who attended any of those three camps. And I know you're out there. There was one kid at Lincoln Farm who was somewhat nice to me. And his name was, I'll never forget his name, Chris Magenta. I don't know who he is now. He was a Jew from Brooklyn.
It's probably a magician.
Chris, if you're out there, I want to hear from you. You were a decent guy that summer. That's all I got about summer.
Wow.
Top
wow.
that. Top that, yeah, Jews. No.
Wow, that's like severe trauma.
Yeah.
Hello, mother. Hello, father. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining. And they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining.
All right, guys, our first guest this week is a real camp expert. We've got Sandy Fox. She's a doctoral candidate at NYU studying Zionist, Yiddishist, and denominational summer camps. So she, like, is the real deal. She's also the founder and producer of Weiberteich, a biweekly feminist podcast entirely in Yiddish. Did I mess up the title?
No, it's pretty good. Weiberteich, very good.
What does it mean?
Basically, back in the good old days in Eastern Europe, when women didn't have access to become literate in Lashon Kodesh, men would translate Jewish text into Yiddish, and it was called Weiberteich. Weiber means wives or women, and Teich sort of means translation or sense. Basically, it's like mansplaining, the original mansplaining, and we're
amazing.
Flipping it on its
Look
head.
At that. So I would like the first question. As the historian mm-hmm. of Jewish summer camp, how fucked up are Mark's summer camps? Like, are these the worst stories you've ever heard?
I mean, well, actually, just in terms of the fucked up part, well, I laughed last week. I listened to the podcast last week to prepare, and I laughed when you said we're not going to get dark on camp week, because camp can be dark sometimes, right? Like, camp is a microcosm of real life, and part of what I do when I study the everyday lives, like the texture of life at camp, and I look at the post-war period, there are moments that are troubling, right?
Yeah, camp must have been really fun in 45, like, yay, we're going to camp again.
Yeah, sure. Well,
we've
I mean,
been in camp from like 39 till 44, but like, okay.
I mean, well, these Jews hadn't been, right? They were mostly second-generation Americans.
The 7-year-old refugees who arrived are like, and now you're going to leave your parents for 3 months. We're going to put you on a train
well,
and
actually,
go off to the Berkshires.
My favorite camp is one of those camps. So in 1959, there was a Bundist Yiddishist sleepaway camp that was founded in upstate New York for the children of Holocaust survivors, and it was exactly that way.
Oy. You will That's get on some Metro North.
I mean, but they love
you will
that
go
camp.
To the camp okay, where so, they will give so you we, soap and you will bathe.
Jews obviously love God. To like take credit for like Jewish celebrities and all these sort of things. Did we like is summer camp a distinctly Jewish thing? Is sleepaway camp like do we get to claim this as our own?
No.
What?
I know. I really don't want to disappoint. Basically, Jews do sleepaway camp different than other groups do. Jewish camping began alongside kind of secular Christian camping. But these camps are not necessarily hospitable to Jews. And especially in like the nativist 1920s, the tribal 20s, Jewish camping really begins to take shape. But people who aren't Jews also go to camp. They just go to camp somewhat differently. I would say that camp is more so a socioeconomic class issue than a Jewish issue, right? Other middle class or upper middle class Americans go to summer camp.
So I was at my poker game. It's a poker game with a bunch of guys, one of whom is half Jewish, two of whom are married to quarter or half Jews. Like they are Jew-friendly people, but I am the only Jew there. And at one point I said something about camp, and one of the other guys who's married to a woman who's Jewish said, oh, well, you know, of course Jews love summer camp. And I had never heard this thing. And I don't cry anti-Semitism easily. Like I host a Jewish podcast. Like obviously I'm pretty thick skinned, right? But I felt so othered. I was like, what do you mean Jews send their kids to summer camps? And everyone around the table kind of nodded, like, well, yeah. And this was a guy again who's married, he grew up middle class in Delaware, middle class Catholic in Delaware, married a Jewish woman, was like, well, everyone in her family, they go off to summer camp. No, like back home. And I didn't even know I didn't know this was a thing. And then it left me wondering, well, what do Gentile kids do in the summer? Like, do their parents not get annoyed with them and say, we want you out of the house 6 hours a day? Like, why would it be, even day camp, they seem to feel.
See, I'm not from around here, but my impression is exactly that. Like, when I got here, like, the people who go on and on and on about summer camp are always the Jews.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, no, and that's definitely
and it includes
true.
Day
why?
Camp.
Why is well, that? I think what is that, up
okay,
with
so
us?
So, again, there's a little bit of the socioeconomic element, but even for Jews that are not middle class or upper middle class, there's a ton of scholarship money going into Jewish camping.
But they're going
camping.
With money too. Like, what do they do?
Sure, they go to camp.
Why aren't Buffy and Miffy more excited?
I don't know much
excited.
About actually today. I should say they went to camp. I don't study contemporary America. I just live in it, unfortunately. but you know, they did go to camp. But Jews, I think that the Jewish camping sector became really, really strong and powerful, really well-funded, and made the case that the best form of Jewish education was going to be in the immersive, totalizing space of camp, and that basically only when you take the kids away from suburban, affluent, you know, post-war America, can you make them into real or quote-unquote authentic Jews? And this is all in quotes. I don't believe that
authentic Jews or authentic Americans?
Authentic Jews. I'm looking. No, there are definitely are assimilationist camps in the pre-war period, but in the post-war period, the camps I look at, like the Yiddishist summer camps, the Zionist summer camps, the denominational ones, they're really actually making the case for preserving and even producing the authentic Jewishness.
It also occurs to me that another group that, as I think about it, that another group that does vacation camps, summer camps, whatever, is evangelical Christians, right? Yeah. That communities who think we have this charge to form our kids in a certain way, vacations are a good time to say, well, okay, enough with the public school. Like, we're going to go take you out of time and out of space and form you that way. And then it's actually just probably less of a thing in sort of broad church, liberal Protestant, or lapsed Catholic America. They don't see vacation as this time to like give their kids a shot of of Jesus or Jew or whatever.
And evangelical camps, they tend to be shorter, like one week
program. Bible camps.
What's an 8-week
it's
thing?
Really yeah. Okay. So I think that my guess, I would say, is that because Jewish camping started so early and they own their properties, that's a large reason why. No, I'm serious. That's a large reason why they're longer. Like, if I were to start a summer camp that propelled my ideologies, I would not be able to afford to do it for 8 weeks, right? I would
what
have
would it
to,
be by the way?
I was gonna ask.
Probably would be like a Yiddish speaking summer camp. Yeah.
It would be awesome if Rebecca came back from Ramah this summer speaking Yiddish.
It probably won't happen.
I would pay a lot more for that.
You have to pay for my future camp. You know, if the academic track doesn't work out for me, I'll be creating.
Well, between you and Jordana, I mean, that's 10 kids. That's a
right.
camp.
We kind
I mean,
of are.
Sure. Yeah. No, there are kids
we're
for
keeping
it.
We're keeping Ramah alive anyway.
It's so funny to think that as you're saying this, camp basically grew out of school, right? Like, they were just like sending us to more school and disguising it as like a fun place. And that we were just like nerds.
More school, but with archery.
With like a little bit of sports.
A little bit out of school, but it also grew out of youth movement. Youth movements were huge. Back in the day, more Jews were members of youth movements than went to camp.
Can you explain to me why Camp Kinderland, where I went for a year, was filled with so many assholes?
I'm surprised to hear that, actually, because I've heard
horrible.
Really wonderful things
little
about Kinderland.
Baby
no, they were Stalinist in every which way.
I can't speak to that. Sorry.
Can you tell us
thought I'd try.
Who invented color war? Like, how did we get this thing?
Oh, yeah. I have
where does it
a
come
whole
from?
Chapter that deals like with... Well, with Maccabiah, color war, but also with Tisha B'Av. Yeah, you can combine them in one chapter, and that's what I mean about the darkness. But Maccabiah, or color war, came out of camping more broadly, not a Jewish invention, but Jews really reshaped color war to serve their ideologies. So at a camp like Masad, which was a Hebrew-speaking camp, every year the Maccabiah had a theme that had to do with Zionism, and the teams were fighting against each other, were representing, let's say, like different parts of Israel or whatever. So people reshaped these days to project their ideological aims.
I was with my boyfriend's sister this weekend, and she was telling me about color war. We were talking about this episode.
You come like fiance.
I was just saying you can
yeah,
upgrade.
I don't really like
you're
that
a
word.
A couple of months from
whatever. you're supposed to congratulate me when I say fiance. That's
congratulations.
Thanks, guys. So basically, she was saying she was talking about color war. And so I went to a camp where color war was every Sunday throughout the year.
Every Sunday?
And so it was totally different from...
What camp was this?
Point of Pines. It was a camp where everyone was Jewish, right. Not a Jewish camp.
I don't study those, but that's a worthwhile project.
For your next one. But no. So what she was saying, she was talking about color war. And she's like, you know, at the beginning, so we would do like ball pickup. Or the first day of color war was you just split up into teams and then you had to find all the balls that were like over the tennis court walls and like around the campus, and volleyballs were more and soccer balls were more points. And I'm like, wait, so you were just like doing the, like you were just cleaning up before the end of the summer.
That's totally
finding all the missing balls so they don't have to buy new ones.
Yeah. I mean, even simple things like cleaning at camp could be infused with ideology. I mean, it's all, there's a lot of work at these camps.
So at Kinderland, we weren't allowed to win anything. Everything, and you could be winning 17-2 in volleyball or 20-2, and then they would stop the game and say, it's a Kinderland tie.
That's funny.
I would lose my shit. I'd be like, what do you mean it's a Kinderland tie? Like, we're winning. We're about to win. You can't stop it now. Oh.
God. At my camp, we could win, but then everyone would say everybody's a winner in Young Judea. That was how we like ended the game.
You're like, no, it's just not true. Like, kids don't believe that.
I had very little stake in these games, so I was like, sure, everyone's a winner.
What's the most surprising anecdote you came across in your research? Like the craziest thing that went down at these.
By the way, it would not
camps?
Surprise you to hear that in Israel it really doesn't work that way. There has to be a clear.
There are no ties.
That does not surprise me. Yeah.
Color wars every day.
It's true.
Israel is basically a color war. And we're like, blue is winning, like big time.
Okay, so I have a lot of favorite anecdotes. And actually, I have a little blog where I post
my favorite funny things.
It's called P.S. I Lost My Blue Hat. It's a Tumblr. You can find it if you just look up P.S. I Lost My Blue Hat. One anecdote that really struck me is at that same Bundes Yiddishist sleepaway camp for the children of Holocaust survivors, they had this yearly day called Warsaw Ghetto Day. And one of the activities was building, at least one year, I can't say it happened every year, but they would build a Warsaw Ghetto wall as a simulation and then tear it down and do this very emotional Warsaw Ghetto Nacht presentation. And a little like tidbit, extra anecdote to that is that they also built memorials to the Holocaust at the camp, which then campers would guard overnight on Warsaw Ghetto Night. And one of the people who made one of the memorials was Daniel Liebskind.
The architect.
Where his career comes from.
Yeah, so I spoke to him about 2 weeks ago on the phone. He was so nice and so generous with his time. And he was like, you just reminded me that my first Holocaust memorial was at Camp Hemshech when I was 16.
This is the worst sequel to Wet Hot American Summer ever.
I know. And I want
to make out by the Warsaw Ghetto Memorial.
I love the fun stuff. I'm writing about hookups at camp. I'm writing about basically everything that went down. It just also includes...
Are there more hookups in Jewish camps than Goy camps?
I mean, there are no statistics on that. But I will say that camp directors made very little effort to stop it.
Jewish continuity.
Sure. Like, I mean, they weren't as concerned with continuity in the same way we are now.
Like they're not obsessed with it.
Yeah, it's not an obsession. They're not using that term in my period. But they definitely don't stop it. And alumni networks are super proud of how many marriages came out of their camps.
I have to say, I think there are a lot of Jewish camps I would have liked.
Yeah, I think you just had a specifically traumatizing experience three times.
Yeah,
I would have liked Jewish chess camp. I would have liked Jewish debate camp.
Sure. Sandy, one final question for you. What is it like to host a podcast in Yiddish? And you can answer this in English or Yiddish. Like, give us a taste of what we might hear on Vibertaich.
Really? You want me to do this in Yiddish? But then no one will understand me.
Give us like a little English
well,
and Yiddish.
Like an inflected? Yeah. You want like an Vibertaich is a feministische podcast of Yiddish, was ich mache allein in der Heim. Ich mache interviewen mit kolorai Menschen, was reden Yiddish, junge Menschen, alte Menschen, chassidische Menschen, weltliche Menschen. Und es ist sehr schön, so ist das Herren.
Amazing.
Vielen Dank.
Yeah,
so Sandy Fox, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I brought you guys a Vibertaich magnets.
You got swag. That is amazing.
So sweet.
That's how to roll.
Take those silly shoes off and go back to summer camp. And don't ever come back here. You look like you live in a tent. I'm wasted. It's a drunk as hell.
our next guest today, also kind of a camp expert. Micah Hart co-hosts the podcast Campfires and Color Wars, and he calls it a podcast for everyone who physically left camp years ago, but emotionally is still sticking their tongue in a battery-operated fan to see what happens. I know exactly what happens. It like kind of hurts a little bit, right?
Yeah, that's true.
It hurts only a second, but really just because the batteries drain out in about 15 seconds, so you can only do so much damage.
I love the fans that sprayed water also.
At my camps, those were confiscated as illegal gadgets.
Okay, so what prompted you to start a podcast about summer camp memories? And like, also, what camp did you go to and are you obsessed
with? And what happened to you there, man?
Well, I grew up at Henry S. Jacobs Camp in Utica, Mississippi. There are Jews in the South. People seem astonished by that fact every time they find out I grew up in Mississippi. And I also went to a summer camp in Indiana called Gucci, which did not seem strange to us at the time, but seems very strange anytime someone finds out that fact.
What, how did you spell it?
G-U-C-I, Goldman Union Camp Institute.
My God. That's what real Gucci should stand for also.
That's right.
Right? I think it does. But so my father was a camp director, and so I had no choice but to grow up at summer camp, although I was pleasantly thrilled that that I got to do that. And, you know, I'm just kind of like the girl from American Pie. Like, I just constantly referencing camp, telling stories about camp, driving people who didn't go to camp crazy with the amount of camp memories that I bring up. And, you know, just thinking about how I wanted to have a reason to do that so I wouldn't seem so crazy. But in all honesty, I have so many friends out there who, you know, who grew up at summer camps also, who just have such fond memories for that time. And as we get older, you know, things kind of start to fade a little bit. So it seemed like a great way to keep those memories alive and keep camp in my life, despite the fact that I am a little too old to go anymore.
So we won't ask how old you are. But so as the child of the camp director, are you like an army brat? Like, what is that? Is there a term for it?
Do you have special privileges? Like, you know, do you get extra food? What do you get?
Yeah, so there's definitely a term for it. That's the staff brat. And lots of camps, you know, camp directors have little kids. They're running around all over the place. They think they own the place. There's definitely a stereotype of the staff brat behavior. I like to think that we weren't like that. I have two sisters. I like to think we were relatively well-adjusted. But it wasn't so much that we got extra stuff as much as we were expected to know everything. And that was very frustrating. I'd be, you know, a nine-year-old in my cabin, and everybody in camp is asking me, what's for dinner tonight? And what are we doing for evening program? And I'm like, I'm nine. I have no idea. Leave me alone.
You're like, I'm hungry too.
That's right.
What is the deal with, like, the camp doctor? And those, like, because that's always the parent of, I feel like we'd had visiting doctors at my camp, and it would be someone's father, but it would be like a plastic surgeon for a
right.
week. Like, were they, what was
or
that?
Or a psychoanalyst.
What's, yeah. Like an ENT.
I think as long as they knew how to prescribe Tylenol and tell people to drink water, they could pretty much cover their needs.
So, Micah, I was, as you know, I was one of the leading all-time guests on your show on Campfires
Absolutely.
And Color Wars, and that was a lot of fun. And so when I was on your show, I told my my camp horror stories, which I've now shared with Stephanie and Liel and the whole
traumatic
J crew. But I don't flatter myself that those are the best stories you've ever gotten. Like, you've been hosting this show now for a year or two. What is just the craziest stuff that you've learned about summer camp? Like, what are the anecdotes that are just singed into your memory forever, and try as you might, you can't shake them?
Sarah, my co-host, always likes to say that my view of camp is myopic, that I'm for some reason shocked to find out that people's experiences were different than mine.
That's what Sid always tells me. I think all of my experiences are normative and everyone else is deviant.
I still think there's some truth to that, but maybe I'm wrong. But so we had a few weeks ago a woman who went to Camp Tyler. I want to call it
Tyler Hill. Yeah, I'm familiar.
Yeah, Stacy Davidowitz, who is a children's book author and has written a bunch of books set at a summer camp. And their color wars at their camp is 6 days long. And I cannot process that, because the camp color wars that we had was just a day, and it was so emotionally intense that stringing that out over 6 days, just that seems like the Olympics.
So that
in terms of
is part of my is sort of what I'm curious to ask you about. So Tyler Hill is sort of like Indian Head and Bryn Mawr and Point of Pines. These are all these sort of camps in the Northeast where people that I knew went, right? And they weren't Jewish camps. They weren't, you know, affiliated with the congregation. But what I didn't realize till after was that I'd say 90% of the people there were Jewish, right? Like, I it wasn't something I thought about. It was just sort of, it was how it was. And so I was just telling our last guest, we had color war every Sunday for 8 weeks, and then it ended with Team Sing. So I think color war actually might be serving a different function at these camps.
Well, maybe so. And I suppose in hindsight, I would have liked to have tried it, something like that, because I'm so competitive. I loved color war. It was my favorite thing. And famously, we did not do color wars at my dad's camp, because my dad believes in a utopian society where there are no winners and no losers. I shouldn't say no winners. Everybody is a winner, just no losers.
So wait, what else was like the ideology of that camp?
It was all about there's enough time for failure and feeling insecure during the rest of the year. He wanted camp to be the place where every kid felt comfortable. And so we did not have dances. You couldn't strike out on the baseball diamond. And it's funny, a previous host of the show, Judy Becker, loved to say that you'd think that not letting people strike out was a boon to their self-esteem, but if you really sucked at sports, it was actually the opposite of that. And if you had to stand up there and take 15 hacks at it, it wasn't really accomplishing what they wanted it to accomplish.
It's like cruel and unusual.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a question that I think is for it's for Micah, but also for Stephanie. I don't really know how to phrase this without sounding, I don't know, less than my best self.
Is this going to be like part of your thing about hating like Long Island and people who send their kids to camp that isn't like rooted in Jewish values?
Kind of, actually. What I was going to ask is, so, you know, in the Ramah world, right, like sometimes you hear stereotypes that the kids at one Ramah will say, well, that Ramah is the one where all the Japs go, or that's the Ramah where that's the one where they show up with like 20 party dresses and makeup and stuff like that. And I guess I'm curious, there is a real thing going on where certain camps, what they promise is we're going to give you an escape from the materialist values that you have the rest of the year. And certain camps are like, we're the camp where kids can get dirty, and we're the camp. And I don't really know how to phrase this. You know, for once I'm at a loss for words, like, is there something that goes on where summer camps are a place where middle or upper middle class Jews, among others, negotiate this question of like, do we have too much money and stuff during the year? Do we give our kids a utopia from it? And like, how do camp directors handle that as well, which is something your dad had to do?
So I'll take a stab at this, but then let you go second, Micah. So at our camp, we had a uniform, right? And that was purposeful. Like, so it was an all-girls camp, and we had to wear a white shirt with a logo and blue shorts. And like, yes, everyone wanted the bulldog shorts one year, or the MJ Sophies one year, but everyone had to wear the same thing. And that was a really important thing. And I think that's the case at a lot of these camps, especially someplace, I think, like Bryn Mawr, another all-girls camp, where you do get a lot of people from upper-middle-class backgrounds. So there is definitely an attempt made to sort of take us away. Of course, then, you know, when you're an inter-A, you can wear a different shirt to a social, but you have to wear jeans. And then there is, you know, within that, the girl with the Prada backpack. Like, there always is. But there's such a...
That's a title of something, the girl with the Prada backpack.
Like, there, you know, you always know stuff like that. But people don't really care as much. And I think that in a sense that you are collecting, in any case, people of similar socioeconomic backgrounds and just, like, throwing them into bunks. I would say there was definitely an emphasis made on this being an escape. Don't bring, you know, like, wear your Tiffany bracelet, but like not to swim lessons, you know, like there's definitely like an attempt there. Right. What do you think, Micah?
I definitely think, you know, it's certainly in its best state. It's meant to be that. It's meant to be that escape. But it does seem like it still manages to seep through in some ways. You know, if it's not someone having a Gucci bracelet, it's their parents sending them this, you know, 6 foot tall care package every other day. You know, that was kind of how you knew who had money. Or whose parents cared about them.
Love them
My
most.
Dad sent me three-day-old sports sections.
So my dad used to clip out Yankees box scores and send them to me.
That's so sweet.
The other one you get is you hear the stories about the kids who show up with two cell phones, the one that'll be confiscated, and then the one that they that they still have for calls home.
What our second to last year of camp, they split up all the bunks because we sort of like lived together the next year, and so they wanted to prepare us. So they split up all the bunks, and then within 10 minutes of us getting to camp, they were getting calls from parents who were obviously had been called on like covert cell phones to like campers called crying that they were separated from their best friends. And the camp counselors were, I mean, the director was like, okay, give us all your cell phones. We know you have them. So Micah, one last question for you. How much do people fall into the Ramah category, the Hamonims, the sort of Yiddish Zionist camps, or the sort of more secular camps? How would you describe sort of the lay of the land?
I would say most of our guests that have been Jewish have been to sort of the extended sleepaway summer camp. So, you know, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks. But we've also had guests who grew up at like scout camp, you know, sports camp, things like that, that were more like week to week. And that is such a different experience than what I'm used to, for sure. I can't imagine getting to camp on a Sunday and it being over, you know, 6 days later. I guess if the whole thing was Color Wars, that would have been awesome. But I think a lot of them were sort of kind of like what you said, Mark. If it wasn't Jewish in name, it was certainly Jewish in attendance. But for the most part, everyone seemed to have kind of similar memories of, you know, growing up, learning lessons about themselves, feeling free, you know, having their first experiences of various kinds.
So speaking of first experiences, Micah, is everyone's first kiss in summer camp?
Not mine.
Certainly the case if you are a complete nerd at home, definitely. my friends from home famously did not believe that I had girlfriends at camp because I never did at school. You know, I finally got to bring someone home, my wife, and they couldn't refute it anymore. But I definitely think that,
You met your wife at summer camp?
No, I wish. Just the fact that I brought someone home, period.
Oh, okay.
That I had actually,
met I told you my imaginary that. Girlfriend was
so
real.
Wait, Mike, are you saying you were camp hot?
I don't think I was camp hot. I don't think I would have been considered.
Is there a different value system?
I have friends who were definitely camp high.
Hold on, like if you're like a 6 at high school, are you like an 8 at camp? Is there like a number inflation there?
It's more than that. I'd say it's more like if you're a 5 at home, you could, in the right circumstances, be like a 9 at camp.
Wow.
I was debate hot.
Still are, Mark. Micah, how can our listeners, who obviously love summer camp, listen to your podcast?
Yeah. So you can find us on all, you know, podcast network, you know, apparatus, it's Campfires and Color Wars. We release our episodes every other Thursday. And we're always looking for interesting new guests to tell their summer camp memories, stories. My white whale is Jennifer Goodwin. I don't know if I remember telling you this, Mark, or not, but
the actress.
That's my claim to fame. Is Jennifer Goodwin and I dated for 24 hours at summer camp?
What?
Ooh, that is strong.
You definitely were camp hot.
You. She was camp hot.
Micah Hart, thank you so much.
Thanks,
we really
Micah.
Appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Love the show.
All right. Love yours.
Now's the time to tell you that Gal Gadot and I went
to scout camp together.
That's right.
Our final guest today is my friend Jordana Horn, who is, in addition to being a terrific writer about parenting, you can find her stuff at kveller.com. You can see her from time to time on the Today Show talking about, what were you talking about, Jordana?
Oh, the benefits of not doing everything for your kids.
Yeah, but you had a clever name for it.
No rescue.
No rescue parenting. If your kid forgets to bring something to school, just fuck them.
Exactly.
Anyway, Jordana Horn is, in addition to being a terrific writer about parenting and Israel and Jewish stuff and other things, is a mother to 6, which makes me look like a real piker. So one imagines that she and her husband have written some camp checks from time to time. Jordana, welcome to Unorthodox.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry that I can't be in there with you, but I actually had to take my child to the bus leaving for camp.
You always have that excuse. Every time we try to book you, you're only in New Jersey, like 12 miles as the crow flies.
I know.
And it's always like, I got to do something with a kid.
Like, at this point, isn't it cheaper for you to just, like, buy a summer camp?
So there is going to be a point. We were actually talking about this just the other day, and I think there will be a point where it'll make more sense to have our own camp.
Yeah.
It might even make more sense to, like, you know, go somewhere for a month with everybody and...
I was always envious of people who got to do that. It seemed very, like, you'd go to, like, the countryside somewhere in Europe, and I was like, oh, how classy.
Right.
You need a dacha somewhere.
That? I mean, as long as they have alcohol there, I think it could work out very nicely.
So, okay, 6 kids, where are they all at camp? Are they, some of them doing shorter, some of them where?
Like, right, so the youngest is 2.
She's not at
overnight camp. so this is her first time, actually, at like a drop-off be by yourself kind of thing. And it's a whopping like 2 hours a day. So she's there, and her older sister, who is 3, is also there, but she has a longer day. Then the next two are at a day camp that's pretty local. It's about a half hour away. And then the top two are boys. And number two just left today, and he goes to Camp Ramah. So the bus just departed this morning from a parking lot full of anxious Jewish parents. He goes for 7 weeks. So he just left today. And then his older brother, he goes the second month of the summer. He goes to an art camp in South Jersey, which I just discovered Jonathan Adler is an alum of this art camp.
So it works, is what...
So apparently, but, you know, I was like, oh, no, what, like, if Jonathan Adler went to this camp, like, why is it, like, it's kind of dumpy, you know? Like, you would think it would be, like... Oh, well, if Jonathan Adler went here, like, the bunks would have, you know...
Well, the pottery studio is, like,
Exactly.
So you're a pretty committed, conservative-oriented Jew. Do you feel... And your kids are in public school, right?
Correct.
So do you feel like summer camp is, like, this mainlining injection of Judaism? Or, I mean, how do you see it fitting into their...
I do.
Into their Jewish... into their Kinderstube?
Yeah, exactly. You know what I think? There's a real value to... learning that Judaism is something that it's not just in your life through your family structure and through the fact that, you know, we build this weird hut in our backyard 8 days of the year, but it's also this whole thing about you can go somewhere and be with a community of Jewish kids. I feel the Shabbat experience at Jewish camp is very special, and I think the whole idea of, you know, he's at this camp, I mean, this is where... I learned certainly Birkat HaMazon, and there's the davening element, but there's also just the social piece of these are kids who obviously the families have determined that this is something that's important to them as well. So it's really a community, both the people who are there and the alumni, and it's a really nice and important thing. And so it sort of makes a kid see that Judaism is... portable kind of experience that they can individualize and make their own.
But my recollection is that, like me, you hated summer camp as a kid, right?
I sure did. I'm not making any bones about that. I'm really nerdy, and I remember going to camp and just being like, I really, like, they're making me be outside a lot. There's a lot of, like, activity and moving around. I have a whole, like, trunk full of books that's right here that I would really rather just be sitting and reading. And that was, you know, people, I remember opening the trunk and people were like, wow, you have a lot of summer reading. Me being like, this is for fun. So, and that was a little, you know, it was like kind of embarrassing. It sort of marked me from the beginning. It's like, this is not for you.
So when you have a couple of your kids away for weeks at a time and then the rest, I mean, you have more quiet, peace and quiet now than during the school year.
This is the first time within my experience of being a parent of six that there has been even a moment of the day where there are no children here.
Wow.
In the house.
Are you enjoying it?
I mean, it's been all of, like, it's been all
10 minutes.
But
at this point, do you hear, like,
minutes.
Phantom children? You'll finally have the opportunity to sit and read books, which is what you wanted to do since you were a child.
What I wanted to do for so
this
long.
This is like that Twilight Zone episode, right, about, like, the person who just wants a quiet moment to read and then his glasses shatter.
So my mom and I always used to have this joke. I think it's based on a New Yorker article at some point, but it was about, like, parents going down to their, like, vat of martini, like a martini cellar downstairs that they open when the kids go to camp. And we always joke about it. I have no idea where it came from. I texted her this morning and she's like, I think it was like a New Yorker article. I always imagine it as a cartoon. But so what happens when the kids go away? I know your situation is different, but typically, is there ever, like, too much quiet for people once their kids go away?
So in my town, I have no idea. This could be just suburban legend. I have been starting to investigate this purely out of curiosity rather than any desire to become involved. But there was a rumor that over the summer when the kids are at overnight camp, there's a local bar and restaurant that becomes a swingers place.
Oh,
where, whoa.
Boom.
like, you know, when the kids are away, the parents will play. I mean, to me, there's the idea of swinging doesn't particularly appeal to me, but it certainly doesn't appeal to me, like, with, you know, future, like, carpool buddies, team coaches.
Yeah,
like,
more likely the kids are away. I'm going to sleep for 6 hours
On the other hand, Jordana, on the other hand, as a journalist, you would be delinquent if you didn't at least try to figure out if this is true and pitch that piece to Tablet. Because because you're from a fairly Jewish town, like, there's a Jewish angle to this. As a journalist, you owe it to yourself and us to find out if this is true.
And I now have I now have more of a chance of success, because in past years I've brought that up with John, that I really wanted not to swing but to investigate the rumors and, you know, maybe flesh it out for a piece. And John's like, you are tremendously pregnant. He's like, I'm like, what are you saying? Like, this is not appealing. He's like, I'm just saying you don't really look like someone who would, like, be interested in that for, like, you know, a non-insidious purpose.
The most amazing thing is that, like, while all everyone's kids, the idea that everyone's kids are, like, away at camp making out for the first time, and that all the parents are making out with each other also. There's just, like, indiscriminate hookups over the summer for everyone.
I mean, basically, it's a big Cheever story is what it is. She's writing her own Cheever story. I knew you were the right guest to have on this
show. Not to make things more PG, but when I went to camp, we brought disposable cameras, and at the end of the summer, you would develop them all and see all your pictures. Obviously, that's so different now. So what role does social media play as both a parent and a camper? Like, can you check pictures of your kids every day?
Yeah, you can. I think that's a very easy way to go totally crazy. As exemplified by me, my son's first summer at camp, when they posted a picture of him, he was wearing a hat, he was standing behind a kid. Something about the shadows and the way that he was standing, I mean, he looked happy, but it looked like he was blue, like his face was blue. And I showed it around to a couple of my friends. I'm like, does he look blue? And they're like, yeah, you know, laugh it off. But in the meantime, you know, I'm like calling the camp. I'm like, is he okay?
Did you turn my son blue?
They're like, hang on, let me transfer you to the crazy Jewish mother hotline. Like, please hold.
So the crazy thing is that...
Wait, was he blue?
Her son was not blue.
No, he was not blue.
Can I just do... The whole
regular pigmentation.
They now do this thing where you can email a letter line and they will print the email out and give it to your kids. Basically, it's just letters, but they will print out your emails rather than forcing you to write
that
letters.
That sucks.
This upsets me to distraction. I'm just like, why on earth can't – and Sid sends emails and I write paper letters and the grandparents write paper letters. Like, whatever. We're not technology averse. If it's there, we use it. But, like, where did the demand come from? Who were the moron parents who basically cajoled the camp directors and saying, well, we're not going to use stamps. You got to print out our emails for us.
I will say this. So they can't email you. You know that, right? Like, in other words,
they have
only
to write
parents
letters.
Or the people on the outside can email in, but they can only handwrite letters out.
Not only can they only write hand letters out, they're required to write a couple times a week to somebody. So it's like homework for them.
To their senator.
This was a friend of mine said that going into the dining hall, they had to give, like, a stamped envelope home, you know, sealed stamped envelope, in order to, like, get into dinner. So a friend of mine, the parent, received
just blank envelopes?
Pages in an envelope at home.
Wow, that is cold.
It is cold.
Hey, Jordana, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Your work is all over Google, but do you keep a website of your stuff?
There's a website, and maybe one of the things I'll do this summer will be to actually update it.
Anyway, so, Jordana Horn.
JordanaHorn.com.
One of my favorite writers, not least because she makes me feel like my life is calm. So thanks for being with us.
I try.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ready or not, here comes Mama! Mama's talking loud. Mama's doing fine. Mama's getting hot. Mama's going strong. Mama's moving on. Mama's all alone. Mama doesn't care. Mama's let loose. Mama's got
the... We'd like to take a moment to welcome to the other side of the studio glass, Noah Levinson.
Of the Ira Glass ceiling.
Of the Ira Glass window, who brilliantly edits our show and chooses our music and all that stuff.
Makes us sound good.
Makes us sound good. Cuts out the embarrassing moments. Noah Levinson, welcome.
It's good to be here.
Now, you are not here for the next couple weeks because you're going on the
I'm going on my own summer camp experience. That's right.
So you're going to Israel?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I was running out of eligibility years for Tugleet, for Birthright. So I'm going next week with, I don't know, I guess like a bunch of 18-year-olds from McGill.
Right. So Birthright is, for those Jews who don't, for the last three Jews in the world who don't know, Birthright is for 18 to 26-year-olds. It's a free trip to Israel.
Yeah.
And they, but they organize you usually by campus or by, but you as a single adult non-student, they attached you to McGill University?
No. That was, I don't know who's going to be on this trip.
It's funny to me to imagine a bus full of people who like just slid in under the Birthright deadline as opposed to these like nubile 18-year-olds like having the time of their life. You guys
it's
are like
the expendable.
Scotch,
right?
Please.
We're 26. We're too old for this shit.
What's the latest that I could make Aliyah not have to serve in the army?
Probably 30.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you want to serve in the army.
Right.
It's amazing.
It's like Rush.
The army is summer camp. For 3 years with guns. It is fucking fantastic.
What are your thoughts like before going? Have you been to Israel before?
I've never been.
Are
no,
you
I have.
What are you most excited about?
So I'm pretty excited for, I'm going to be staying in Israel for another 6 weeks after my trip. I'm going to be editing the show from there.
What would be hilarious is if the show gets like more and more like Hebraicized and Zionist and like all of a sudden, right? All of a sudden, like it's all versions of HaTikva.
And like all the songs are like Hebron, our city forever. Yeah.
So I'm just going to be bumming around. Like I don't have a place to stay. I've been like reaching out to friends of friends. I have somebody at a yeshiva who said like,
amazing.
Come take classes with us. But
he's going to Eish HaTorah. Basically, he's never coming back. He's going to get
that is what my mom and grandpa are terrified of. So you guys both went on Birthright, the two of you, right?
So I did something
Stephanie
weird.
The three of and us, Mark, your whole life is
he lived Birthright. Right. So what we did was a few years ago, I think it was actually 5 years ago, tablet we embedded on a Birthright trip. So five reporters went, they knew that we like basically emailed a bunch of people on the trip to say like, hey guys, we're journalists, we're on your trip, and we're going to be writing about everything you do to find like, but basically to show the behind the scenes of Birthright. No one liked it. We're like, and you guys can blog too.
I love the idea that if like two undergrads hook up on Bedouin tent night, Stephanie's there with like a notepad being like,
would you say, are you enjoying this? Is this awkward?
Will you talk tomorrow?
So the crazy thing was like, we would like hike the Negev all day and then stay up blogging all night. So it wasn't a normal experience, but I do feel like, and it also wasn't, I think on purpose, it was not a drinking trip. So I missed the whole drinking culture.
So I went on Birthright as a grad student with, I was a grad student at Yale, and I went with the Yale undergrads who were sharing a bus with Emory.
Damn.
And what was fun, so I had a great time. It was wonderful. It was my first time to Israel, my first of now, what's two times. And one of the girls from Emory, her brother had gone on Birthright a few years early and met his wife on Birthright. So her mother basically was like, Rachel, I forget if it was Rachel, let's call her Rachel, like, you're going on this trip, you're going to meet a husband on this trip. And she had like 10 days. And she was...
I would watch that show.
Oh my God.
That's a great
show. But also, you know,
show.
Birthright pays for your honeymoon. That's not a joke.
If you meet your spouse,
if you meet your spouse on Birthright, they'll send you to Israel. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
No way.
One-way ticket.
That's are you motivated now? Do you want to meet someone?
I think it's like the only way I can rebel.
The reality of any religiosity, and this is true if you're Catholic, if you're Jewish, if you're Protestant or whatever, is like, if you move one click to the right or left, that actually will be perceived as a rebellion.
Right.
So actually, like, you don't have to go Orthodox. Just come home and like, just, you know, start keeping kosher. That'll do it. That'll do all the work.
Start editing a Jewish podcast.
Yes, that'll do all the work.
Yeah. Oh, no, they love that.
So what are you expecting to find vis-a-vis the Israelis?
Besides
yourself. Who do you imagine you're going to meet?
It's a cookie filled at 6'5".
Yeah. I really don't know.
What's your imagination of us? Is like Atlanta, like crazy bearded giants? Like what is...
Yeah, well, right. So I always like when sort of the stereotype I'm expecting is going to be subvertive. So I've been told Israelis are extremely rude, pushy, impatient.
Yeah, sure. It'll be subverted. did you pack bags alone?
Whereas I am like the guy at Duane Reade who like waits, who lets people cut him in the...
Yeah. Yeah. You never know. Is it one line? Is it two lines?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But if you guys have like recommendations, or more importantly, unorthodox scene.
Yeah, listen. Yeah. Let's crowdsource this, mother.
I'm going to be in
you
Israel.
You are at noah.a. Can we give out your email? Why not?
Sure. Send it to the owner. Yeah.
Send it to unorthodox.
Yeah. All right. Send it to me. I'll handle this. Send it to moppenheimer@tabletmag.com. If you want to buy Noah a drink in Israel, if you want to give him a place to stay, if you know a nice single eligible,
if you would like to
Israeli
fornicate anything you want. Noah is available in Israel from
July 23rd to through the end of August,
until the end of Elul. You mean
that's right.
From mid Tammuz to late Elul,
You have no.
I'm your guy.
I'm like sad that we're not going to see you every week.
I'm going to miss you.
Like, I'm excited for you and your personal journey.
But this is going to be amazing.
But no, my personal journey won't be as good.
My advice would be, and it's, I know this is not, you don't need this advice, but like, stay open minded. Like, learn, just absorb everything. Like, don't just listen, don't speak, which for me is hard. But it really is, you know, I mean, it's the advice of travel in general. But
and now I will give you another piece of advice. Do the exact opposite. Speak all the time. Do not listen. Just go wild. And you would fit right in.
The funniest thing about Israel is, like, you know, when you go to Europe, people just like don't like Americans and you don't really want to speak English. People love Americans in Israel. Yeah. They're like, oh, where are you from? Where are you from? Are you going to make Aliyah? And you're like, no, but I will have the hummus, please.
Anyway, Noah Levinson, have a wonderful trip. Keep us posted.
קולות בלבב בנימה נפש יהודי הומיה.
We asked for camp memories and you sent them. Here's one from Adam Diamond in Porter Ranch, California.
Picture it. Camp Ramah, Ojai, California, 1989. I'm 14 years old. The camp had brought in Craig Taubman, who was the song guy for new Jewish music. My friends and I were forced to go, but we weren't going to jump around and sing and dance to Craig's music like 99% of other campers. But he came into the audience, grabbed my arm, and literally pulled me up on stage as he continued to sing and dance around me. My friends at this time were pointing and laughing at me on stage. There I was, on stage, standing perfectly still with just a grimace and a look of embarrassment. I wasn't going to give in and pretend like I was having a good time. After that painful song ended, I walked back to my friends as they continued to laugh at me. Today, when I hear a Craig Taubman song, I'll actually sing along because he has some really good stuff. But I also think about how he humiliated me, a nerdy 14-year-old boy, in front of the whole camp just for singing and dancing pleasure. P.S. Craig, if you're listening to this, I forgive you.
Another camp memory, this one from our super listener and frequent correspondent, Judith Clow.
Hi, Jewies. I did go to Jewish camp, but it was during the Shasha years of Judaic life in Massachusetts. So on Friday nights, we wore white, lit non-denominational candles, and sang Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. On the other hand, we always made a motzi before eating.
Another camp memory, this one from Eric Winnick, who is now the chief marketing officer of the JCC Manhattan.
Hello, Jews. It was summer 1979 at Camp Simcha in Middleton, Massachusetts, and my bunk, Yegor, part of the Chalutzim unit, was given the option of participating in Israeli dance or auditioning for the camp musical, a truncated version of Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore. Given I have no rhythm whatsoever and enjoyed Israeli dancing about as much as, well, Israeli dancing, I opted for the audition. To my surprise, I wound up nabbing a lead role. The show was as successful as camp musical could be, and I then went on to act, write, and direct in both high school and college. Then, in New York, off and off Broadway. A desire to keep a roof over my head led to jobs in arts administration, and in 1999, I became the marketing director for a prominent off-Broadway theater, a position I held for 15 years. In 2014, with theater out of my system, I applied for and got the job as chief marketing officer at JCC Manhattan, where I oversee the marketing of a variety of areas, among them three-day camps. So I suppose it's fair to say that had I chosen Israeli dancing that day in 1979, my life might have taken an entirely different direction.
That is amazing. I love that one so much.
The kids where my kids go.
Eric Winnick. Another camp memory, this one from Matilda Sharon.
Camp had a rocky start. I wasn't a Chicago native, just a summer inhabitant due to my parents' transient ways. Showing up to the Park District's counselor orientation as the lone soul in a sea of people who clearly went through 12 grades together felt like being the new kid in class for the umpteenth time in my life. To punctuate my angst, of course the guy who yelled the loudest and exerted the most enthusiasm about every training activity would turn out to be a fellow art camp counselor. You probably know where this goes from here. It turns out he had the right taste in music. We bonded over both having the sense of humor of a 12-year-old boy. All the campers adored him, and by the end of the summer, so did I. Flash forward 7 years, and we're about to celebrate our first anniversary as husband and wife. Among the many things that have made year one of marriage so special, discovering Unorthodox, hat tip to Molly Yeh, and listening to it over dinner, laundry, and road trips ranks pretty darn high. So shout out to Matt Sheeran, my best friend and unconditionally loving Ashkenormative husband. You've more than made up for a childhood without summer camp.
Another story of summer camp love, this one from listener Leah Marcus.
Do I have a summer camp tale for you?
Growing up, I knew pretty much one thing was certain. I would attend Cleveland, Ohio's own JCC overnight camp, Camp Wise, the summer before seventh grade, as my two older siblings had before me. But in sixth grade, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, and my overnight camp fate was sealed when my parents learned of the availability of a two-week-long juvenile diabetes overnight camp in Newberry, Ohio. While I was able to meet some fantastic people and develop lifelong friendships, I still missed quintessential Jewish overnight camp experience. Nevertheless, all was well, until I met the man who would become my husband. Upon meeting for the first time, we immediately began to play the classic game of Jewish geography, only to discover that despite growing up in completely different cities, we had a great number of friends in common. The common thread? JCC camps and that elusive Camp-Wise experience. The place where he spent summers singing Cat Stevens, Simon and Garfunkel, and Peter Gabriel songs with my childhood best friends. The beloved Camp-Wise where he developed a crush on his camp counselor. My sister. I tease my parents, who always stress the importance of marrying a Jewish man, that they may have caused me to miss my opportunity to meet the man who would become my husband. But it seems we did a good job of missing each other all on our own, meeting each other some 13 years later. Beshert is Beshert.
Our final listener camp story from Brenda Becker.
Greetings, Unorthodox. Love your show. My summer camp experience was Kupa. My mom would spend big bucks on Atlantic City Steel's fudge, 1 pound bucks, and mail it up to me and my sister at camp. Yet we never saw it. It was immediately confiscated and packed away in the candy cabinet in the main dining room. Imitating kibbutz living in upstate Pennsylvania, on treat night, we somehow were on the wrong side of the cafeteria when the fudge was distributed. Never even got close to eating that fudge, never even saw it, just the experience of unwrapping it and handing it over.
Oh, Brenda Becker. That's a heartbreaking one to end on.
Really sad.
Why socialism will never work. Takes candy from children.
Leah, this whole episode I've been wondering, do you think it's funny to think about like young sheltered American kids like pretending they're at Zion, like playing teams named for things in Israel?
Yep.
Have you just been like rolling your eyes on the inside this whole time?
I'm not rolling my eyes. I'm amazed. I'm delighted. I'm, you know, not surprised, but
that this is how like the diaspora is.
Yeah.
The funny thing is like this whole, I've been thinking about camp for the past few days, like in the lead up to this episode. And this really bizarre thing was happening where I could like smell areas of camp. Like I thought about, I sort of like went in my head. I was like, okay, obviously the campfire area, but I was like the dining hall. And I like smelled that specific smell, like the water ski place,
my experience with the latrine door.
Yeah, same thing. But like I could smell the rec hall and I was just like, wow, these memories seep into your brain. I mean, I spent 8 summers at camp for 8 weeks.
Oh yeah. Wow.
10 months for two. Do you guys have that?
10 months.
Did they say that in Israel?
They say that in the JCC Manhattan.
I'm going to turn this over a little bit to the listeners for Mazel Tovs. Our super fan Jeffrey Grossman wants to send the Mazel Tov to his friends Marianne Tatum and Harvey Nabolsky, who are both in the klezmer band Orchestra Farfalla. And another listener, Ahuva Odenheimer Bergman, sends a Mazel Tov to fellow listener Tippi Pearl Turner, who with her husband Ian are celebrating at some point this summer their 25th wedding anniversary.
Because they met at camp.
Because they met at summer camp.
In Phoenix, where summer temperatures are now 188 degrees.
Right, where airplanes can't take off. And just on a more personal note, a Mazel Tov, they don't listen to the show, but to my daughters, Rebecca and Ellie, I'm going to miss them, but also not miss them.
But you're okay.
But you're going to that martini cellar.
Oh, wherever Jordana Horde, wherever they're swinging in Jersey, that's where I'm having my martini tonight. Unorthodox is brought to you by Tablet Magazine on the web at tabletmag.com. Write to us at unorthodox@tabletmag.com. Sign up for our newsletter. We haven't made fun of newsletter signer uppers in a while. We're going to get back to that. Sign up for the newsletter. Sign your friend up for the newsletter. Our executive producers are Alyssa Goldstein and Shira Talushkin, and our show is edited by Noah Levinson. Our wonder intern, or if you're Yiddish, our wunder intern is Sophie Oresti. Our music is by Golem. Rabbinic supervision this week by our correspondent, Rabbi Rachel Kobrin. Kosher slaughtering by Travis Callen. Does he say Kalanick? Kalanick? I'm gonna call Uber's Travis former CEO, Kalanick. Travis Kalanick. We record at Argo Studios, which has a pre-existing condition, and we're proud to be part of the Panoply Network. Shalom, friends.
This is on a bus back from camp. I'm 13, and so are you. Before I left for camp, I imagined it would be me and 3 or 4 other dudes I hadn't met yet running around all summer getting into trouble. Turned out it'd be me and just one girl. That's you.